This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to another episode of White Wine Question Time, Something from the Cellar, where this week we're revisiting a conversation with a woman who last night took her first tentative steps into the Big Brother house. She's a novelist, she's a daytime television queen and a broadcasting legend. Fern Britton has become a housemate alongside the likes of Louis Walsh, Levi Roots, and word has it, Sharon Osbourne's going in. So we thought, what better excuse do we need than to revisit a conversation I had with Fern over, well, several glasses of wine a little while back. So sit back and enjoy learning about one of our genuine national treasures. Oh, and next week, fellow housemate Louis Walsh gets the same treatment. So here she is, Fern Britton. Enjoy. Fern, did you ever think that you would be writing novels in double digits?
Never thought I'd write a novel because it's huge. Yes, I've learned my journalism. I became, what is it called when you join up and you learn from the people you're with? You're an apprentice. So I started really as an apprentice in newsrooms, and you get it. You know, people say, oh, well, you didn't go to university. No, I didn't go to university and I didn't do any journalism courses, but I did live in a newsroom for 12, 13 years. So I guess I've got it now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I did that and loved it.
And where
it.
You started out, regional newsrooms were a big thing, weren't they? I mean, it's not so big a deal now, but that was where the likes of you and I could go and learn our trade. And
absolutely.
Every region had a buzzing newsroom.
Yeah, absolutely. And they were great fun. And back in the 80s, you're too young, but you might have just caught the end of this. We were still on ordinary typewriters bashing away. A great big room, just as you'd expect, with everyone smoking. And you stood up and you went into a cloud of nicotine smoke and everyone bashing away on the typewriters and running around shouting, you've got to go and get here. Oh, fire engine going down, you know, and all those things. And it was quite brutal. I mean, some of the male journalists, reporters were quite packed with testosterone, and there'd be punch-ups and people rowing and of course there's great drinking culture. Everyone was in the pub at lunchtime. Not me necessarily, sometimes, but not necessarily, playing Golden Brown endlessly on the jukebox in the pubs. I remember that. And then you'd go in and finish a show, go on air at 6, finish at 6:30, straight into the bar. And if there was anybody who didn't like what you'd made that day, the film you'd made, where you'd be absolutely slaughtered and told it's terrible and you'd be wanting to cry, but you're a woman, so you go, I see, I understand. And then at the end of the show, when you're all in the bar, everyone goes, that was fantastic, thank you so much. So you think, oh, you learn very quickly not to take things personally, which is a big benefit.
Especially for the life that then followed. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm going to come back to some of, well, hopefully some of your early days as a professional. But I just wanted to touch on where we are right now, because you've got Watercolour Challenge on, which is just about as pretty as a picture can ever be on telly. I mean, some of the places you've gone to are just gorgeous, aren't they?
The United Kingdom is full of the most beautiful places. And because we live here, we don't necessarily go and see them. But I think during these last couple of years, we have looked at our own countryside and discovered that we do have splendid things, or things that we thought, I'd really like to go there, but you don't. Now you think, actually, yes, I will go there.
Do you ever miss the manic pace of life of 5 days a week on live telly, London traffic, school runs? I mean, the chaos.
That was very much a part of me. So a part of me does miss that. And when I do go to London, I'm quite excited. And then it's also just wonderful to come here. I mean, this is the first time in a week, at least, that I've put some makeup on for you. Now, normally I haven't got makeup on for about a month, but I've had a couple of these recently. So I think, oh, good Lord, I've got to put my face on.
It's, I mean, gosh, as juxtapositions go, it's, you couldn't be at a more extreme end of having to get into the hair and makeup chair, production meetings every morning, you know. That's, yeah, I mean, I don't think I could run at that pace again, I'll tell you. Too old.
Well, I think, I don't think it's age. I think it's experience that lets you know that even though that's exciting and brilliant and great, I'm over it. I've done it. And it's right. It's nature, you know, saying, hey, look back, just stop for a minute, look back of what you've achieved, because when you're achieving it, you have no time at all to look at it. Have a look now and think, that was okay, actually. Yeah, that was all right. And then I'm looking forward very much now to the next, goodness knows what the next chapter is. But yeah, I'm it's good.
That is beautifully queued up, my first question to you. In fact, couldn't have been a better segue, Fern. Are you ready?
Oh.
I wanted to ask you about chapters. Authors work in chapters, but for you, I wanted to know which of your own chapters in life have been the most meaningful.
There's probably about three that are the big ones. I think my teenage years were a huge chapter because I grew up very quickly and I was very independent very early because I grew up with just my mum and my sister, and my father had remarried and had a son, and I didn't know that I had a brother till I was about 15, 16, 17, something like that.
Wow, that's a hell of a secret to keep. How did he keep that a secret?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's a lot of people kept secrets at that time because I grew up not knowing my father. I knew who he was and he would occasionally be able to visit, but I just imagined he was out filming and working and being an actor in the theatre, and that's why I couldn't see him. I didn't realise that he'd left and was remarried and had my brother. Nobody told me. I don't know why they didn't. And it wasn't until, I've told this story before, but it's still only about 8 years ago, that my father told me what happened. He had left my mother and my sister, and then he came back to see mummy and my sister, fell into bed with my mother, disappeared very shortly after, I don't know whether it was the evening or the next day, and had started me. And nobody told me. That's why I hadn't ever lived with him. So that's amazing, isn't it?
Isn't it?
So when he was in his 80s, he told me. And I said, well, that explains it all. But nobody else had ever told me. So anyway, cut a long story short.
Why not? Why? I mean, surely that was a key piece of your own life jigsaw. You would have thought somebody might have imparted that sooner.
None of them. I did tell my mother when I found out. And I said, why on earth didn't you tell me? And she said, well, you know, we didn't talk about that sort of thing. And I said, but it's my history. And she said, oh, you and your history. So I think it was obviously a very painful time for her.
So when we talk about childhood, actually, you're still piecing parts of it together, even at this stage in life, right?
Well, yes, absolutely. So my young days are still very much present and I'm putting it together. But I think growing up, I was a very independent child because I only had my mother as a parent and my sister, and I had a fantastic uncle and aunt and lovely people around me. But I became very independent because nothing much was really expected of me. My stepfather turned up when I was about 9 or 10, I think. And then I was really launched into, okay, I'm a separate entity now. My mother has my stepfather, my sister was in London, and I was just sort of bumbling about getting on with school. And then I got into drama school to be a stage manager, which was incredible. And I got in and I had 2 wonderful years there. And I had a boyfriend I fell very much in love with. And he was the first person to tell me that he loved me. No one else had ever mentioned that before. And he said, I love you. And So I was 17, 18, in love with this guy, Naughty Nick, who knows jolly well, and his daughters even say to him nowadays, apparently, that he's, you know, heartbreaker, which he was. And then I was off into the theatre.
Is that right? Wow. You laugh about it now, but those are all big experiences for a young mind. Your first strikeout of independence, you know, doing a job that you love and falling in love. And actually hearing that somebody loves you for the first time. That's a long time to be alive without anybody putting that in your ear.
Yeah, it blew me away. Absolutely. And absolutely a door into a different set of feelings. It was very good. Although, of course, you know, it's heartbreak and all that because you're young. But then I'd done my training as a stage manager and I got a job in the theatre and I got my equity card and off I went and was stage managing around the country for 2 or 3 years. And then when I was 22, I think, I got my first job in television. So that was a big chunk of kind of school, growing up, drama school, first job in television. So that's a big chapter.
That's a huge chapter. I mean, and actually so much of what you learnt then still informs you now, because you and I toured together on the Strictly Come Dancing tour. And one of my first observations of you was that you just wanted to hang with the crew. You weren't hanging out with the cast so much as you just had a natural affiliation with what everybody's jobs were backstage and how they were getting done. And in the end, you even started traveling on some of the production buses rather than the dancers' buses.
I did. Yes, I did. I was very much a part of the tribe of the crew and the band. And they were so much fun. I mean, the band bus.
The band you loved.
Yes.
Didn't you?
And we get on the band bus. I mean, gosh, we did this big Strictly tour. It was hilarious, Kate. And I loved it. And you were so kind because I was missing my sons and I was sobbing backstage when I was missing them. You were missing your son. And there were all sorts of things, weren't there? It's an emotional thing to go off on tour for 5 weeks and think that you're a rock star. We were treated like rock stars, weren't we? Absolutely wonderful. The first night I got onto the band bus, I said, excuse me, can I get on with you lot? And they went, ha ha, well, it's only taken you 5 days, but you're on our bus. And they're so, So very good at everything. There was somebody carving a handmade artisan sourdough and someone producing some homemade cheese and a nice little chutney and a bottle of Malbec. And it was, different to the dancers who were just funny, hilarious. I just felt better on the band bus.
So you have this intensely informative burst of activity in your late teens into your early 20s. So that's one chapter of great meaning. What about the other two that you mentioned?
I think obviously having children. So I think having my twin boys was something miraculous because they were IVF and it was my fourth go and I was already ready about to go, I can't manage anymore, because anyone who's been through IVF knows that those drugs and the routine and the enormity of lifting your hopes and dashing yourself, and it's extreme to say the least. And I got good at doing my own injections, carrying them in my handbag constantly, bags of needles and things, with a letter from the doctor explaining what they all were. It's very tough, expensive, tough, and, difficult. But I was so lucky to have the boys, and I got the boys. And then when they were about three, I discovered I was pregnant. And, miracle, you can't be. And I thought, well, yes. So I had this beautiful little girl, Gracie. You met Grace, I think. So Harry and Jack are the boys, then Gracie. Then, unfortunately, my marriage broke up when she was 5 months. So that was a tricky one. So I had a year of...
Oh, fun.
Yeah, had a year of really digging deep.
That's so hard.
Yeah, but at the time,
So you've got toddlers, a newborn, hormones and heartbreak.
But then a year later, I met Phil. And we were married after a year. So that's 2 years since Gracie was born. And then the Last Chance Saloon, I always say it's late night shopping just before the doors close. Winnie arrived. So that was exciting. And then we had Winnie. And then that's a whole chunk. And then I was doing This Morning by then. So when Winnie was born, that's a whole other story. I'll tell you about that. It was when Richard and Judy had left. I was pregnant. She was due in September. The show went off air as it used to for the summer. And then my boss said, well, you've got to come back. Mm-hmm. I said, well, she's going to be born in September and you go on air in September. And, I'm 44. I can't just turn up. And he said, well, if you don't come, then there's no job for you. I went, well, sorry, then my time is, that's bad timing. But no, I can't just turn up at work having just had another baby. No. Anyway, after a few months, there was a bit of a disaster going on at This Morning and they didn't have the right presenters. And then I was telephoned again.
Was this Twiggy and Colleen?
And I don't think they had a very happy time.
Yeah.
And then John Leslie came in and then he rang me up and he said, oh, you've got to come back, because we had been working together before. And so I said, I don't think I can. Anyway, the bosses rang and said, would you do it? And I said, well, I'm going to have to come with Winnie every day because I'm feeding her and she can't be without me. And can you help me, somebody to look after her while we're on air? So they said, yes, that's fine. So then I just did it. I did that for a year. And it was fun because she had her picture taken with so many people in the green room. This little baby.
she did.
And she'd sleep and eat and I'd feed feed her in commercial breaks. And on talkback, sometimes I'd hear, and I'm interviewing something, doing an important interview, and they go, Fern, just nod. Is the cowpole in the bag? Is the cowpole in the bag?
You're like, Brilliant. I mean, that, my friend, is tap dancing your way through motherhood at the most extreme end. Wow. But you know what, Fern? Isn't it interesting that when you first say, I can't come in September because I'm having a baby, it's like, well, take it or leave it. It sounds like there wasn't a huge amount of empathy or let's look at this or how can we work this out? How progressive would it be for us to wait for you and for you to come back and actually that become part of the narrative because it reflects so many viewers' experiences at home as stay-at-home or part-time working or full-time working mothers.
Yeah.
But then look at how the attitude changed when they needed you. How can we help? Do you want a nanny? We'll give you, we'll ask questions about cowpole on talkback. I mean, why could they not have just done that in the first place?
Because the program bosses were men. And I'm not a man hater. But I am a feminist. I'm not a man hater. People seem to equate feminism with man hating. Mm-hmm. It's not that, as we know. It's not that. But they were guys. No. And this particular one, I said, well, also, unfortunately, I'm 44 and the other two pregnancies I had sorry to be so graphic, I had to have cesarean, and I know that this baby is going to be born by cesarean. So I won't be able to sort of do anything for the first 6 weeks anyway. Oh, my wife was driving after 2 or 3 weeks. And I said, oh, was she? And how old is she? Like, you know, 30. And I suppose you've got an automatic car? Oh, yes. I went, well, I haven't. So, you know, different.
Yeah. Do you know what's the shame about it, though, is that you proved, but because they needed you, you proved that it can work if everybody comes together and provides solutions, yes, rather than just sitting around tutting about potential problems.
Yes.
But what a shame that it had to be done that way. But thank goodness that you were there to show the way.
Well, I don't know.
I don't get it, because Richard and Judy, I mean, the whole family thing was huge. It was a massive part of the on-screen narrative as well.
Well, it's 20 years ago, for a start, you know. And so it was, wow, a long time ago when things hadn't moved as fast as they have now. And I accepted it because I've never... In general, I don't think I've ever been a pain in the ass to work with. I just kind of go, oh, okay, whatever.
So, I mean, that was a very action-packed few years, to say the very least. IVF, twins, closely followed by a miracle baby, followed by a very swift end to your marriage, a recalibration, a new TV show. You meet Phil on the set, along comes Winnie, and Richard and Judy vacate the seats that you think you can't take, but turns out you can. Oh, I'm exhausted. You must have been knackered.
Yeah, it's been interesting, you know. but everything has also been... In lots of ways, I wouldn't change it, because it does teach you a lot about yourself, a lot about your capacity to work without sleep, under enormous pressure, dealing with yourself as well as a family, as well as the press, and so I very much felt that I could put that person, that woman, onto a television screen. She had nothing to do with me in my life, and then I could go home and be me. Have you had that experience?
Yes, until I started in daytime television, and then I felt like there was kind of nowhere to hide. So I started to very slowly. It took me a long time to open up and share what actually really was my life. And I think it was when I couldn't host a show like, for example, Loose Women and not explain, because the chats were so personal and the topics were so varied, and not sort of say, hey guys, guess what? I'm actually not in a relationship anymore. I'm a single parent. My life's changed a lot. And because it informed so much of what we were talking about. And then I learned to kind of just actually stop trying to be one of two people and just sort of blurred the two. And it felt a lot easier, actually, a lot more honest.
Yes. Well, I'm there now. I'm blended and I'm one person again. But I think it was just the only way I could deal with it was to, when you go to work and you have your face put on and your hair and everything else, that person doesn't have any problems. She can be honest and everything else, but doesn't have problems. I was told very, very, very early on, and I have been doing this for 42 years now. Crazy. But very early on, someone said to me, never complain about your life on air, because as far as the viewers are concerned, you are in Hollywood La La Land and they are having difficult lives. You think, yes, that's exactly it. So, you know, there's no point. But now, yeah, I'm older and I'm contented. And so I think, yeah, I can say these things now. I feel that I'm allowed to. I've given myself permission to. And there's no one telling me, oh, don't tell them that. Don't tell them this. Sod it. Here I am telling you.
It's funny, though, because, you know, to me, growing up watching you on shows like that, as I was coming into my early part, the early phase of my career, I thought you were disarmingly honest, and it's only knowing you as I do now that I know that actually you were literally tickling the surface of what was going on in your life when you showed great empathy to people struggling with mental health issues. I didn't know the depths of your own experiences. I didn't know that you'd, you know, had struggles with IVF. So there was so much you gave, but so much that you didn't. And it never felt like we were being kept out of what was going on in Fern's world.
Oh, well, that's nice. That's nice. But, you know, also... The very important thing, as you know as well, is that to be a real presenter in terms of that kind of show, Loose Women, This Morning, those kind of shows, you are not the star. The person, the story is the star. And I always wanted every guest to be comfortable, to know that their story has been told. They've been able to tell their story properly, fully, been listened to and heard.
Mm.
And that was the most important thing and is the most important thing. I can't bear it. You know, I couldn't bear it then. And I can't bear it now when all the programmes for the National Television Awards, they're all, oh, you must vote for us, vote for us, vote for us. You think, how embarrassing is that? I couldn't bear to do that. People are going to vote for you if they like it or not. Can't do it. No. What would be, why would I go, why would I, I'm not canvassing. We're not Prime Minister. It's just to get a silly statue. Oh, just hang on a minute. Oh, like okay. This.
She says, getting her NTA.
Yes.
Which one's but that I mean, for?
And I'll tell, well, I tell you, actually, this is for This Morning. And it's not the one I picked up. when Richard and Judy
just
left.
Grab one.
They gave it to me. The bosses said, here, have this one, because it was just sitting on a shelf. The editor did. And so I went to the jewellers and I got the thing changed.
Literally repurposed.
Yeah,
it.
Sod it.
That's brilliant. Yes. I'm impressed. Do you know what? You're so right. You know what? For all the times that we won NTAs or BAFTAs on the shows that I worked on, I haven't got a single one.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, why would I? It was for the show. But it would be nice to have something to reflect your involvement. You're quite right. Well stolen, my friend.
Thank you.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
You are not shy of a challenge yourself. So I wanted to know, when have you ultimately pushed yourself to achieve bigger and better things?
Yeah, we do push them on Watercolour Challenge and they're great. But I think two things. I think career-wise writing, you choose which one I can talk about. Career-wise writing and...
Both.
Okay, my own life, cycling. Because I did manage to cycle from, well, around the world. We did lots and lots of cycles, raised an awful lot of money for Professor Winston, for his... you know, he runs IVF clinics, although I didn't have my IVF with him. But we've been doing everything into... We gave a lot of money, raised a lot of money for his research into everything to do with mother and baby health from conception to birth, including miscarriage, the mystery of miscarriage. And I said, I really want to put together a challenge. And a lovely woman at the... at the charity, Yvonne Konieczna, she took me and she went, yeah, okay, and she fixed it. So we cycled from John O'Groats to Land's End. There were 20 of us who did the whole lot, and lots of women joined us for different legs. And we raised, I don't know, $250,000, $500,000 or something. And it went to use in a study that scientists were doing on miscarriage. And so they, you know, we helped a little way into the mystery of that, to solve that. But cycling all that way is 1,100 miles, and it was wonderful. Really wonderful.
Oh, wow. And it is one of the most underfunded parts of medical research, miscarriage. As I mean, so much to do with female sexual health is massively underfunded, but that specifically to this day remains the case. So whatever contributions you made would have really, really pushed to make a difference.
Well, that project that the charity needed to get going on at Warwick University, they only needed 32,000. So we would have helped them a lot. Do you know what I mean? So, yeah.
That's brilliant. And you used to cover this on the telly, didn't
Some
you?
Of them it would we be, did.
You know, I remember seeing you. Were you doing this morning then?
Yeah, no, I wasn't. But some of them they did cover. And we got so many women to come and join me at Ask the Charity. I was patron by then. And we just went everywhere. So we've been everywhere. We went through India, China, Russia, Estonia. We went from Panama into Costa Rica, into Nicaragua. We went to Cuba. We went to, I mean, everywhere I've been cycling and doing it in your 40s and 50s. I didn't
Amazing.
Do backpacking and all of having a year out. Then we did it. And it was so much fun. And I forged great friendships with these women, because when you're on a bike and you're very hot and sweaty, and midges are biting you, and you've got the shits, and you're throwing up. You don't half forge a friendship, and none of us would have met if it wasn't because if we weren't just mad enough to go and sleep on concrete floors of cow sheds, and sleep in, you know, we were. It's no way is it a glamorous ride, none of that, but it was, God, it was great. And just to get out and be yourself, and the women who had come off a trip, particularly John O'Groats to Land's End, as you were cycling down through the UK, they start talking about their relationships and their husband and this and this and this. Well, they end up divorced and going for somebody else at the end of it. And one lady got to Land's End, took off her wedding ring, threw it into the sea. Went, right, because it brings you back to who you are, the woman that you lost when you were married and had children. You buried your, it's your fault. You know, we bury ourselves in domestic life because we're good at it and we want to do it. And suddenly you come out of that with this group of women swearing and drinking gin and tonics and having a great time on their bikes. All, none of us looking like cyclists. It, amazing, the professional male cyclists who come with us going, I don't know how you do it, you know. And you become yourself again.
You're right. You know, I did one bike ride, nothing quite to the scale that you've just recounted there. But I cycled through Kerala with 22 friends in memory of a girlfriend of ours that had passed away, Nikki Waterman. And it was one of the most brutal and physically challenging adventures I've ever had. But I loved it, Fern. My God, it hurt. Anyway, by the end of the trip, there were a lot of women going, I'm leaving my husband. I'm going back to work. My life has got to change. Because when you're just, when you can't speak because you can't breathe because you're so out of breath, you're forced to go in and look at yourself and have a think. And it is, it's proper therapy.
It is. It's very therapeutic indeed. And yes, I've done that Kerala ride as well, she says. And it's gorgeous.
Oh,
did
it's
you go
amazing.
Right up into the Tea Mountains?
Yeah.
And there's the one day when you're just long downhill. And I just
all the way
down. Yes.
It's the most exhilarating, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, we did that. And we did, yeah,
exactly
Egypt.
Exactly that.
I remember. Oh, Sri Lanka we did. I mean, traveling truly does open the mind, doesn't it? It makes you really look at how other people live. And also it's very handy on quiz shows because you can think, oh yes, I can think of a country that's only got an E and an A in it because I've been there.
Because I've cycled through it. So I love what you got from cycling. And it came at a time in your life when you were just like, you know, your kids were old enough for you to be able to go off and do some of those things and start to reclaim some of yourself. But what about in terms of the challenges that you've presented yourself with professionally, becoming a novelist? I mean, there must have been a lot of eye rolling when you went, and now I'm going to write a book. Because everyone does it.
Yeah, no, it didn't happen like that.
Good.
As I was leaving this morning, I was writing my autobiography. And so that came out and did very well, which was very nice. Thank you. And it was easy to write on one hand because at least you know the facts and where things went and when it happened. But then a publisher came to me and said, would you write a novel? And I went, I don't think so. And she said, well, look, just work with this other editor, work together, and she will teach you and take you through. So I sat with this other fantastic woman. And I said, well, she said, what do you want to write about? And it was all that, you know, write what you know. So we wrote about television. And I'd write a few chapters and send them off to her. And then she'd come back going, well, I think that, Diane, you shouldn't have that and put this. And backwards and forwards for I don't know how many months it was, probably 6 months. And it went out and did okay. And then I was told to go on the second novel. Right, you've got this now. No more hand-holding. Off you go. Write your own one. And it's hard to write 100,000 words. 100,000 words is about 400 pages.
Blimey, yeah.
And because you're so used to fact-checking, trying to get the facts right, no lazy journalism. I've tried very hard not to be a lazy journalist. And so suddenly I'm not fact-checking. And you get lost. You think, well, I need to know when her birthday is and why she... Oh, hang on. Yes, it's her wedding anniversary. That's why they're there. Of course, you know, and start making it up. And it's gone okay. It's just so then I wrote another two and then it carried on. And number 10, I'm just finishing now. It'll be out in June, July.
Blimey, Fern.
Yeah. And the last one I did actually made number one. So something is happening. And so... I think you asking me what's the greatest achievement, I think it's starting way down and then giving myself the time and the confidence to, and being given also by the publishers, the time and the confidence to work out how to write a better book and a better book. I'm not saying I'm Jane Austen, but I'm getting better.
You know what? I mean, it's a very different discipline as well, because you've spent your life being part of a team. You know, even when you sit and as the solo presenter of a program, you're still representing a team that are working really hard. You're a cog in the chain. When you write a novel, I mean, you could be at the top of that mountain in Kerala freewheeling down that hill because there's no one else to catch you, and what you do along the way is entirely down to you. So I can understand you having to unpick that fact-checking journalism, working with the facts, and having to almost shake those off as rules. Yes. And reinvent new ones.
Yes, and truly make it up as you go along. And it's been a joy, an absolute joy, and the hardest thing I've ever done. And I have an editor, Kim, who is, I respect her. Oh, I mean, she'll give me a big hairdryer thing at times. She did once. And I sat there and I thought, no, you know, she's right. Everything she's saying is right. And so I'm not scared of her anymore. And she's fantastic. She's been generous. And an editor just sort of keeps putting you back on the rails when you come off and then gives you hints about where things should go. So I'm looking around to see where I don't even have a manuscript because, of course, it's all in this laptop. But it's coming on. It's coming on.
Yeah.
I'm pleased with it. And then, of course, you think, oh, I mustn't be pleased with it because that's going to jinx it.
No, don't say that. And actually, before we move on to my final question, you're not going to say it, so I'm going to say it for you. You're not just a little bit good at writing books. You're very good. There's no way a publisher would enable you and spend money on creating fantastic novels with marketing campaigns were you not, A, selling lots of books, and B, very good, Fern Britton. So just tell yourself how fabulous you are.
Oh, Kate. Well, thank you.
Okay, my third and final question for you. It's an expression that actually you've naturally used quite a lot in our chat on the last question. As a writer, you are literally making it up as you go along. But I wondered, when in life have you been in a situation where that term actually really does apply, where you just go, seriously, you can make it up?
Yes, I do have one. It's another working mother one. So, yes, okay, where do I start? It's a very rude, the rudest word you can think of in this. Would you like me to, am I allowed to say it?
You can say it and we'll treat it accordingly.
Perfect. Okay, perfect, thank you. Well, so this is my best working mum story.
Okay.
The boys were about 7 at primary school. And as all children do, as we know, they don't tell you that there's an important day at school the next day until about 9 o'clock the night before. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they'd been bathed and scrubbed and in their gym jams and they were in bed. And then suddenly they went, oh, Mama. Yes. Mom, tomorrow is evacuees day. 9 o'clock the night before school, they say to me, oh, they come back downstairs, you know, just as you're opening a glass of wine. And also, I'm working the next morning on this morning and I have to get up at 5. So this is like a quick glass of wine into bed myself. Come downstairs. Mom, yes, it's evacuees day at school tomorrow. Oh, okay. What does that mean? Well, we've got to dress in evacuee clothes and have an evacuees lunchbox. And so I'm already like meltdown, but keeping it in. Yeah. My mum's there and my mum says to me, well, you're going to have to wrap the sandwiches in greaseproof paper and it can't be sliced bread. You've got to have bread that, well, I haven't got any bread that's, oh, well do what you can. So I'm trying to make up this little lunch with greaseproof paper. I did have some of that. And then, of course, I put in an orange. No, we didn't see oranges till 1950, you know. Oh, God. So take the orange out. So no crisps then, Mum. No crisps. Okay.
No.
They'll need a gas mask box around their neck. Just make a little box and put some string around it. And put it around. Mother, I have to do two because there's two of them, two of everything. And it's now 9:30 and I'm going to be up at 5 and the car comes at 6. So I really have got to, anyway. Went upstairs and found, thank goodness, they had a granny who knitted beautifully. So hand-knitted granny jumpers. They're shorts, grey shorts. They'd sort of grown out of by then, but hey-ho. And everything. So I got into bed going, it's done. Got up the next morning. They're still asleep. I had a fantastic nanny called Super Sue. And Super Sue arrives at just before 6. And I'm saying, bye-bye, Sue. It's evacuees day. Don't worry. Everything's done. Lunch boxes in the fridge. The everything's there. Sure. Okay, that's fine. Bye. And I picked up Winifred, who I was taking to work with me every day. So they've got little Winnie. I've already bath changed, fed her. Not bath, but, you know, changed her, cleaned her, fed her. Get her in the car in her little seat. And she nods off for a bit. And then I'm reading the papers and reading the script and writing up my interviews. And reading all the research notes, you know. So that takes an hour and a half. And so it was about a 2-hour journey to get in for me, to get in to work. Get into work, get Winnie out, get into the dressing room, feed Winnie again, do all the professional stuff. And the producer says to us, now then, we've got an actress from the Vagina Monologues coming in. she does the... Well, she does the soliloquy called reclaiming the C word. Can I say it? It's rude. It's called reclaiming cunt. And
yes, which is a poem or, as you say, it's a soliloquy that starts the show, right?
And it's all about women taking that word back to us, for us. It's not just saying somebody's horrible. It's actually, it's us. She must not say that word. Don't let her say that word. She'll be absolutely briefed, says the producer, not to say that word. Okay, all right, fine. So then we move on. A couple more items. Another item. Oh, and we have a pair of people in who design fantastic vibrators, but we're not allowed to say vibrator or clitoral stimulation. We can only say they're sex toys. And that's it. Okay.
So, okay.
Finally, get into the studio. Off we go. Actress comes in. and immediately says, yeah, I do reclaiming cunt. And the paper the next day said, the presenters appeared not to notice. It was John and I, and we just were like, Then along comes Sex Toys, who immediately starts talking about how it works on your clitoris, immediately. So, okay, oh. And then I realised, as I was ready to leave the studio, oh, shit, I'm going to do the Daily Mail handover at National Health Service, Pride of the National Health Service Award that the Daily Mail run. I've got to get to a hotel in Kensington, and I've got Winnie, and oh, so lovely driver I had with me for my entire 10 years, Tony, he took me to the hotel. I get out with, like, I'm late already, 15, 20 minutes late. I have the baby under my arm. I run in, say to the receptionist, I've come for that. Yes, yes, up the stairs, second on the right, down the long corridor, through the door. Thank you, thank you. Up the stairs, open the doors to find the entire room sitting there, turning around and looking at me. A man on the stage saying, and here she is now, Fern Britton. lovely Lynn Falls Wood was sitting there, and she said, give me the baby, give me the baby. So I gave her the baby, and then I went up, no time to do anything, went up, and they went, hello, how lovely to see you, and please, Fern, it's all yours, there's the microphone. I'm going, oh, I didn't have my glasses on, so I couldn't read the piece of paper. Oh, no, I hadn't even got a piece of paper at that stage. So I went, blagging, thinking I'll remember something in a minute. No, nothing. And then I said to the man, I'm so sorry, I have forgotten the piece of paper. So he gave me the piece of paper and I went, oh, no, I can't read it because I haven't got my glasses on. I'm so
sorry. Oh, no.
And I was sweating. And all these National Health Service heroes sitting there waiting to receive an award. And then finally, I got the name, got the thing. The man had to whisper it to me. It's da da da, and she's winning it for blah, blah, blah. Okay. Finally, I said it. This lady came up. Desperately overcompensating. Oh, you're wonderful. Congratulations. Thank you so much. Photo. Oh, thank you. I felt like an absolute toad. Finally got off the stage. Linda Lee Potter stops me. Remember, the columnist from the Daily Mail? Quite scary. I'd often written, rather snipily about me. And she said, come here and sit next to me. Suddenly, I was on this lunch table sitting next to Linda, who was actually very sweet in real life. And the Lynn Falswood delivered me Winnie. So I'm going, just sweating. Anyway, I managed to blag it. I said, I'm so sorry, I can't stay for lunch. I really have to go. Phew. Got out of the room with Winnie. Went down the stairs. Oh, there was Tony outside with the car. He jumped out of the car. He helped me into the car with Winnie. We got her in her car seat. And I sat down and thought, oh, that was a nightmare, but I think I've got away with it. And then my phone rang, and it was Super Sue, the nanny. So I went, hi, Sue, you're all right? She said, yeah, you do know it wasn't evacuee day today, do you? I took the children to school. They looked like bloody idiots. I had to take them home again and get them changed. I just thought... I mean, that's grim, isn't it? I was just, excuse me, but I was a fucking idiot the whole day. And it wasn't my fault necessarily, apart from the fact that I couldn't read and I hadn't got the right piece of paper. But you just, oh, the good thing about the day was that we had Michael Bublé on the show as well. And he's adorable. I'm just funny, adorable, rude, naughty, everything you want. And he got up to go and I said, I wish you could stay and do the rest of the show. And he said, oh, yeah, me too. And I said, because we are doing clitoral stimulation a minute. And he went, I am. So that was joyful. But the rest of it, I've got one more story to tell you briefly. This is out of nothing. This is talking about.
Go on. I love it. Keep going.
We're talking about mental health, right? So when I had the boys, I had terrible, terrible postnatal depression, which was pretty grim. And then when I was expecting Grace, the doctor said, as soon as she's born, I think we'll get you straight into to see a specialist psychiatrist who will talk to you and make certain that you don't have the same experience as you have with the boys. I said, good idea. So the day came that we have the appointment, and my husband and I went to the hospital, and we waited outside for this very special person to come out of their office and call us in. And a different person opened the door and called us in and said, oh, yes, so-and-so's off on holiday and I'm the locum. I thought, oh. Anyway, sat down, and she went through everything. Tell me about your childhood. So I went through the childhood, and she said, and we went through, and how do you feel about your children, and what was it like when you had the postnatal depression with the boys, and blah, 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 blah. And then she said, tell me, do you hear voices? And I said, no. She said, when you're watching television, do you think they're talking to you? I said, no. When you're walking about, perhaps at the shops, do you think people are pointing at you and saying your name? Yes, because they do. They go, oh, hi, it's Fern.
Because they are.
Hey, Fern, how are you? Hi. Oh, look, it's all what's a face, you see. And then she went, And I said, no, they do. They really, really do. She went, And she had me down as psychotic. And I was going to be locked up. And my GP went, oh, for fuck's sake. And rang up the hospital and said, no, she's fine.
Good luck to Fern and her endeavours in the Celebrity Big Brother house. I don't know about you, but I will most definitely be watching. I'm going to be back on Friday with a brand new episode, this time with, well, for me, the hands-down winner of Strictly Come Dancing this year, pro dancer Amy Dowden. She's going to be talking us through her incredible health battles. And the good news is, there is light at the end of her tunnel. Join me on Friday for that episode. Oh, and next Tuesday, Louis Walsh gets extracted from the cellar. If you can't wait until then, dive into our back catalogue. He's there, ready and waiting for you. And let me tell you, you'll be very surprised at Louis Walsh's backstory. Remember that you can always find us on Instagram. So go follow us at whitewine_questiontime. And also, please hit the follow button on Spotify. Thank you so much for listening.
White Wine Question Time is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.